In this episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, we'll have killer gaming rigs, killer mining rigs, we'll get our yoga on, new Z SSDs from Samsung, and a new Windows Core next. Hey, welcome back to the episode we affectionately refer to as Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks. I'm Dave Altavilla here with, again, Marco Cipetta and Paul Lilly, the men about town on the internet. Guys, how are we doing this week? Are we getting all geared up for the Super Bowl?
Yeah, man. As ready as I can be for a non-football watcher.
You're a non-football watcher. You like the party, though. I notice every year you have the Super Bowl party going on, even though you're, like, not a big football fan.
Yeah, this year I was just talking to Paul. This will be the first football game I watch all season. The Super Bowl will be the first game I watch all season, but it's an excuse to make chili and have friends over and drink and have a few laughs. So that's what I do.
Sweet, sweet. Always use it as an excuse. Paul and I, as you know, are big Patriots fans. Paul, how do you feel about our chances this weekend, buddy?
I feel excited and stressed. So talk to me Monday or don't talk to me Monday. We'll see.
I feel excited and stressed as well. We had a little story up at Hot Hardware today that Madden NFL 18 has predicted the Patriots victorious for the Super Bowl. And I don't know what to think about that. I was a little bit betwixt even posting that up on the site because, you know, I get this superstitious, you know, don't want to jinx it kind of thing. But Paul, you wrote the article. Madden is right, like, a lot of the time, right?
A lot of the time, yeah. I pitched to do this one because we've done it the last few years, and I think even maybe even more than that. But, yeah, they predicted the Patriots would win. And Madden's record, actually, when they run this sim, they are 10-4, which is, you know, pretty incredible for a video game to be right that consistently. They also have gotten the score correct one time, and they've gotten the point differential correct three times, and a lot of times they're pretty close. So there's some, if you dig in the article, there's some kind of eerie stats in there about how close it gets.
Yeah, so, you know, like,
Can I ask a question? Yeah. Does that game app actually create the characters, like, using accurate stats and physics for each player? So, like, if one player is faster than another, do they run faster in the game too?
Yeah,
because, like, that would be an accurate model if you think about it that way. Yeah, that would be like an accurate simulation if the players are actually modeled after the real players.
Yeah, they are. They all have their own stats. But it still, to me, is impressive that they can be as right as they are just because, you know, it's a team sport. So many things can happen, as we've seen in past Super Bowls and games.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. You know, I was thinking about this because in the headline we had the words AI and simulation. And, you know, I was thinking about it. I'm like, you know, AI is the big thing now. And, you know, everybody's doing it from the data center to the cloud to, you know, machine learning and machine vision in cars and, you know, computer intelligence everywhere. But if you think about it, computer games have had AI for a very long time. And, you know, usually it's your opponent in a single player game. It's the computer that's, you know, if you hop into Doom or whatever and you're playing single player mode, you're playing against an AI, right? It's an artificially intelligent character in this simulation. So this is sort of a testament to what EA Sports has been able to achieve, I guess, with NFL, Madden NFL 18 or Madden NFL the series. And that enemy AI, or not enemy AI, but in this case, the computer simulation of those players, right? It is AI in the real sense. Is that fair to say, or are we giving it too much credit?
And no, in one sense, it's fair to say. Go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry.
Yeah, as I say, I think it's fair. I mean, they're not really pushing the whole AI angle. I don't think they're quite there yet. But their model's pretty accurate. Like I said, when you look at their past scores of what they predicted for these Super Bowls, they've gotten it right once. They've gotten the point differential right three times. And a lot of the other times, they're pretty close. So they're not just predicting the winner. but they're predicting, you know, some specifics that, you know, would be hard to do as a, you know, as a gambler or a fan or whatever.
Yeah, like last year's Super Bowl, the thing predicted, you know, the score like perfectly, right? They predicted the actual score perfectly against the Falcons, right?
Yeah, I don't remember if it was last year's Super Bowl or the Seahawks on the Patriots and Seahawks. I forget which one, but it was one of them. They got the score dead on, and a lot of times they're pretty close. And they also make predictions on like passing yards and receiving yards and things like that, and they get some of that stuff right too.
It's fascinating stuff, and when you think about it, and when you think about like the data they have to feed that in, the statistics, right? And you look at what's out there these days for fantasy football apps. I did, you know, my first foray into fantasy football this year was this year, and I actually used the Yahoo app for fantasy football, Yahoo Sports. And you know, they've got every player in the NFL, you know, that's not like on the bench, you know, any you know, either first or second string player that gets some decent play time that they can accumulate stats on. They've got everything that you'd ever want to know. Yards after carry, you know, or after catch, excuse me, all the different stats. And when you think about, you know, machine learning and AI, and, you know, the AI is as good as the data you feed it so that it can learn from it. Yeah, you would think it makes sense that this thing can simulate, you know, based off the stats, the raw data, can simulate the outcome pretty well. I hope they're right. Damn it.
Yeah, I hope so too. If not, they're junk. I hate Madden. We'll see.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're Patriots fans, and we're probably making a couple of enemies out there, because I know it probably gets old to see the Patriots in the Super Bowl, but it never gets old for us, ever. But yeah, we'll cross our fingers like everybody else. You know, it's funny on that subject, and then we'll move on to tech. There was a reporter that asked Brady about, you know, is he uncomfortable being in the underdog seat, to ask Tom Brady, Patriots quarterback, the GOAT, as we call him up here, greatest of all time, asked him if he was uncomfortable being in the underdog seat, and he answered the question perfectly. He said, I'm not uncomfortable at all. There are no underdogs. Anybody who shows up at the NFL Super Bowl is worthy of being there. They're a great team. They're a worthy opponent, a killer team, and we're going to have to play our best. So I think he's right. I mean, you look at the Eagles, you look at if the Jaguars made it in, holy mackerel, any of these teams can bring it, right?
Any given Sunday, yeah.
Any given Sunday. That is why we like the game. Marco's a big boxing fan, so we won't bore Marco with any more football for now, right, Marco?
I'm not bored. I like watching you guys.
we amuse you, Dewey. Oh, great. Yeah. Do I amuse you? Am I a clown to you? All right. Let's move on to the tech. And Paul, you took a look at some interesting stuff from the folks at Origin PC, the Millennium Gaming Desktop. I want to call it the Millennium Falcon, but is it as cool as Han Solo's rig or what?
It is pretty darn cool. We actually had some photos of the system that we took at CES a couple weeks ago. So some people might have already seen a little bit about this. But while that was going on, I actually had the Millennium in-house that I was playing with and benchmarking. You know, it's a tough job, but thankfully you Someone's guys gonna give do that it. To me. Yeah. So let me start with the hardware specs. That's probably the least interesting thing I'll talk about here, but let me talk about the hardware. What they sent us was configured with an Intel Core i7-8700K processor. It's a 6-core, 12-thread Coffee Lake chip that they had overclocked to 5 gigahertz. It had 16 gigabytes of DDR4, 3000 megahertz of RAM, 2 GeForce GTX 1080 Ti graphics cards and SLI. These were EVGA branded cards. A 512 gigabyte Samsung 960 Pro M.2 NVMe SSD. A 3 terabyte Origin approved hard drive, which was actually a Seagate Barracuda. This thing was liquid cooled with a 360 millimeter radiator all-in-one liquid cooler. Had onboard Wi-Fi, 850 watt EVGA Supernova G3 power supply with sleeve cables, and you know, the usual specs you would expect on a system like this. All told, the price came to $4,369. which is, as you know, a high price tag to pay for a PC. Whenever you're going to buy a system from a boutique, or I should say a premium boutique vendor, you're going to pay an upcharge. That's always going to be there. It's not unique to Origin PC. But what I found interesting about this one is because of the current landscape with cryptocurrency mining and how they've driven GPU prices up. When I spec'd out the same hardware, or mostly the same hardware, the price was almost the same. It came out just a little bit lower, but the premium that you have to pay for a graphics card right now pretty much offset the price difference. We couldn't do an exact comparison because this is a custom case. You can't buy this case anywhere. This is Origin PC's own design. But I thought that was interesting that even with the markup that you typically pay for a premium boutique, that's pretty much negated right now because of the situation with graphics cards. So that's good if you're in the market for a system like this, bad if you're looking to build for yourself. So take from that what you will. As you would expect in the performance with two GTX 1080 Ti cards in here, this thing just smoked our benchmarks, particularly gaming and graphics. It pretty much took the top spot across the board. The only ones that it didn't were the CPU-centric benchmarks. And then the Cinebench, and I forget the one other one that we ran. In those benchmarks, it would lose out to systems that have the high-end desktop chips, like a Threadripper 1950X, because, of course, those have a ton more cores and threads to work with, so that's expected. But it performed as it should for an overclocked 8700K. Also, I should mention the graphics cards were overclocked as well, both the GPU clock speeds and the memory clocks. And typically when we get a system that's overclocked across the board, the CPU and the graphics cards, it's not uncommon to run into little hiccups here and there that you might have a crash during a benchmark or something like that. This thing ran rock stable the whole time I had it. So there were no issues there. They obviously know what they're doing in that regard. What's a little more interesting to me though than the hardware specs, because you can configure a system however you want. Starting price for Millennium is actually $1,600, so it's accessible for most people, I'd say, versus spending over $4,000. But this custom case that they design for themselves, this is not something that you can buy over at Newegg or Amazon. It's not a rebadge case that they slap their name on. This is their own custom enclosure, and it is highlighted in the system. Yeah, one of the unique things is you can install the motherboard four different ways. The regular way on the left side of the case, you can have it inverted, or you can have it in both orientations on the right side of the motherboard. So either your graphics cards are at the top, which is what we received. So you see that the labels on there, the EVGA GeForce GTX is upside down. So the graphics cards are at the top on the right side. We can also have them facing up, so it blows the hot air directly out of the case. And they don't charge you extra to have it installed any particular way. You pick which of the four ways you want, and they'll put it together that way. That's one of the unique features of the case. There's a sliding bay at the top. You lift that door up, and then you have access to your front I/O ports. The side windows are tempered glass on the left and right. You can purchase an aluminum side panel if you want to replace one of those so it's not see-through. It looks fantastic with the glass. More importantly to me is how easy it is to get in this thing. If anyone who's been building systems for any period of time has probably fought with the case trying to get the side panel on or off, this one, it just swings open like a car door minus the car handle. It's incredibly easy just to open, get in there, and perform upgrades or just check out the wiring job that they had done, which is impeccable here. Towards the bottom of the case, the front panel swings open as well. And in the bottom, they installed a hot swap hard drive bay. I believe it's either 5 or 6 hard drive bays in there. 1, 2, 3, 4. In ours, we had the 3 terabyte hard drive, which means since it's hot swappable, you can take it out and install another hard drive while the system's running. You don't have to power down or anything like that. So if you're doing backups around the house and you want to do that on a bulky hard drive, it's incredibly easy here with this. Or if you want to add more storage, it's easy. While it's running, just pop in a new one. Windows will recognize it and you're good to go. So there's that. The case alone is reason enough to consider a Millennium, in my opinion, if you're in the market for a boutique system. I did ask Origin PC if they plan to sell the case by itself, because I know they've done that in the past. Right now, they've left the door open to doing that. Right now, they don't have any plans, but they haven't ruled it out either. So that may be something you can purchase, you know, just the case alone sometime in the future. For right now, though, if you want this sucker, you got to buy the whole system. And it's a nice one. So
interesting. So you're really high in this thing. I hate to be devil's advocate, but were there any drawbacks? Were there any major drawbacks that you would point to? Other than, obviously, I mean, you know, 6 1/2 dozen of the other, this thing is configured, loaded for bear with a pair of 1080 Ti's in there. It's bound to be expensive, but obviously folks are savvy enough to know that you can configure it a little bit more cost conscious, if you will. Any sort of intrinsic drawbacks to the setup from what you could see?
Yeah, price is obviously the big one, but I mean, if you're shopping a boutique system, you know what to expect. You're going to pay that markup. Like I said, that gets offset right now by graphics cards anyway, which is good or bad, depending on how you look at it. The only other nitpick was that top panel section is made of plastic, whereas the rest of the case is made of metal and glass. So if you, and it has a little play in it if you're pushing down on it. So if you're touching the case, it feels a little out of place to have plastic up there when the rest of the case is so high end. And especially if you're configuring, you know, a $4,400 system as this one is, but it still looks fantastic. It has a nice honeycomb vented grill on top, that honeycomb design that looks nice. And that top panel, like other parts of the system, it just comes right off. It's held in place with the magnet, so it's not going to fall off. But if you want to get access to that top section and add more fans or install a different liquid cooling radiator up there, you can just pop the top panel off and there you go. You have access to it. But yeah, having it made of plastic would be the other nitpick on if we're looking for ones.
Yeah, interesting. I think fit and finish wise, that panel looks fine. It's nice that it covers up the IO plates. But what's really intriguing is that you actually can orientate the motherboard three different ways in that sucker. So you can send out the typical IO bracket out the back, or you can go, you know, northward with it. So the thermals are going north.
Four different ways, actually, regular or inverted on either side.
Wow. That's really cool. That's an interesting case. I wonder if it's, and you're saying it's full custom. It's not like a semi-modded version of some OEM case that was done just for them.
No, this is not like a rebranded InWin case or Thermaltake or something like this. This is their own case that they've been kind of tweaking over the years. I think it was 2014 when they first came up with their own case and their Millennium and Genesis PCs. And it's been evolving ever since.
And these guys are, if I'm not mistaken, the Origin guys have a lineage going back to Alienware, right? They're a couple of guys that spun out of Alienware after the Dell acquisition. Is that where they come from?
That was my understanding. Yeah, that's where their roots lie.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where their name came from too, is they were sticking to their origins as, you know, hardcore builders. I forget what the specifics are, but it was something along those lines.
For gamers, yeah, makes a lot of sense. And you know, you make a good point about pre-builts now. We talked about this a little bit on last episode, but with the cost of GPUs these days off the shelf, you know, at retail or e-tail, due to the demand on cryptocurrency mining and, you know, GPUs getting scoffed up, you know, graphics cards getting scoffed up by crypto miners, it really makes the value proposition for a pre-built system, even if you know how to do it, that much stronger. Marco, what are your thoughts on that? Is it still, you know, in your heart as an enthusiast to build it your own, or would you consider something off the shelf if you could get a better deal because you're getting your graphics cards, you know, at a reasonable rate?
Right now, I totally would consider a pre-built for exactly the reasons Paul mentions. The price differential is basically gone right now, and you can get some really cool custom hardware plus, you know, expert build quality. So I personally would have no problem with a boutique build like that one.
Yeah. And the other thing that was notable in the article for me from a performance standpoint, Paul, I think we sort of at least exposed, or not exposed, but it highlighted the fact that a six core CPU heavily overclocked at 5 gigahertz, or a fast, you know, high clock speed six core CPU versus, you know, a 10 core or, you know, a higher end CPU, performs from a gaming standpoint better. You're actually able to maintain higher frame rates at like 1080p, and especially at low resolution, high frame rate settings. Is that a fair assessment?
That is. There's going to be very specific tasks where, you know, a high-end desktop chip with, you know, 10, 12, or 16 cores is going to pay dividends for most people. And certainly for gaming, you're going to benefit more from something like a Coffee Lake chip that's been, you know, redlined. This thing's running at 5 gigahertz, plus the graphics cards are overclocked. So it was a solid component configuration or component selection that they did on their part.
Yeah, yeah. Especially when you talk about multi-GPU, I would think. Marco, you're probably pretty familiar with this. In multi-GPU setups, having that extra CPU throughput from a clock speed standpoint, not so much from a multi-threaded standpoint, is advantageous, right?
Well, it depends on the game engine. There's very few games that will utilize all of the threads in one of the huge multi-core processors. So having the latest generation cores at the higher clocks, like that Coffee Lake chip, is the way to go the vast majority of the time, if gaming is your sole focus.
Yeah.
And yeah, when you eliminate the GPU bottleneck and the CPU is the limiting performance factor to feed those GPUs, then that faster gaming CPU is ideal.
Right. Good stuff. Well, come on by the site, check out the Origin PC Millennium, Paul's review that he gave birth to this week. It's good stuff. It is a high-end gaming desktop PC built by some folks that really have quite a lineage and a history in the business, and so they really know how to build a good rig. And it was obvious both in terms of the build quality, the component selection, and just general style and bling. Right, man. Good stuff. All right. Well, let's move on to the world of notebooks and talk about something from Lenovo. We've been taking a look at new for 2018, the Lenovo Yoga 920. Our guy, Darren Polkowski, did a review on this. We launched that Thursday last week, and it is a highly refined machine, I guess I would say, is probably the best way to sort of encapsulate the improvements that Lenovo has made on this series of notebooks. The Yoga 910 previous generation notebook had some drawbacks that, frankly, Lenovo took a little bit of heat over. There was battery issues. There was, or battery life issue, I should say. There was also a little bit of noise factor going on. In order to keep the processor cool, the fans would spin up, and it was a little bit more audible than the average, in this case, 14-inch machine. And so Lenovo went back to the drawing board, and what you see now is a little bit of a refined chassis, but mostly refined internals. And now it sports Intel 8th Gen Kaby Lake R quad-core processor technology. Specifically, we tested one with a Core i7-8550U quad-core, turbos to 4 gigahertz. Again, 13.9-inch full HD 1080p display, IPS display, integrated Intel graphics, 8 gigs of RAM, 256 gig NVMe M.2 SSD, so on and so forth. A very well-built machine and a 70 watt hour battery, well-configured machine with a 70 watt hour battery. So pretty beefy battery on board as well for a 3 pound ultrabook, convertible ultrabook. 3 pounds even. And when you look at other 3 pound machines on the market, whether you talk machines like Dell's XPS 13 or even the HP Envy and Spectre lines of machines in this 3 pound category, you typically see anywhere from 55 to 60 watt hour batteries. In this case, 70 watt hour battery to back up that 8550U quad core processor technology from Intel, 8th gen core Intel technology. And the results were that, you know, we saw great benchmark capability, great performance in the benchmarks, from content creation to productivity to some light duty multimedia stuff. You're not going to game heavy on this machine. and solid battery life. It was in the top quadrant of our tests in terms of battery life. It was also very quiet and, you know, well-behaved in terms of both thermals as well as acoustics. So Lenovo really amped up this machine in terms of performance and also got in check some of those drawbacks that we saw in the last generation 910 series of the Yoga series. But what they kept was the style and the build quality of the chassis. The Yoga 900 series has that watch band hinge, which is really cool. I don't know if you can get that on the screen. Really cool watch band hinge, gives you that 360 degree swing, but also adds a little bit of bling. You've got this, it's at the bottom half of that page, John. You've got this, you know, sort of linked design that really adds a nice aesthetic to the hinge. The only thing that I've always sort of knocked Lenovo for is the occasional omission of an SD card slot. There isn't one here. There's multiple Thunderbolt ports. I believe there is a two Thunderbolt 3 ports and one USB 3 type A port, but no SD card slot. So what do you guys think about this guy? Is this something worthy of consideration for folks out there and looking for a convertible 2-in-1?
Can I go first, Paul?
Go ahead. Have at it.
So I do. I think so. One, Lenovo makes great machines, period. Especially the sleek Yoga line. They're beautiful, cutting edge machines. If you like the form factors and the specs fit your needs, absolutely, I have no problem recommending one. They're just beautiful machines. What I will say is the trend lately to get thinner, lighter, and remove ports and move towards just USB-C kind of stinks. Like this past CES was the first trip I took using an Asus ZenBook as my main machine. And just wanting to charge it while I plug in a memory card, I had to have two dongles going. And it's like, that sucks. You know, I hate that trend. I don't like that trend, but I do like the portability and the beauty of the machine. So I think eventually we'll probably, once USB-C is more mainstream, I don't know, we'll probably settle on attractive designs that have a little more function.
Yeah. Interesting. So the ZenBook did it only have one USB-C port?
It's only got the one USB-C port. Yeah.
They appled it.
They appled it, this particular one. Yes.
Wow. Yeah. No, it fortunately in this machine, you do have two USB-Cs, you know, Thunderbolt capable USB-Cs. So yeah, if you're charging, you fortunately can plug a dongle in at the same time. You don't have to do an either or. I bet
most people don't have USB-C card readers yet though. So it'll be like adapter to card reader. You know, it just is what it is. We're at that stage where USB-C is still technically in its infancy. So.
Right. You know, and I mean, honestly, we're a little bit sensitive to the SD card slot issue. Our use case is such that, you know, we're on the scene shooting video and stills all the time. And so we're a little bit more stringent in that regard. Maybe the mainstream user doesn't use an SD card as much as the average person. They're snapping pics on their phone and sending them around on social media or what have you from their handset versus the laptop. So, I mean, you can make that case there, but yeah, it'd be nice. I think the SD card, at least the micro SD card slot, a really tiny one, getting that just a little slice of real estate into the machine, no matter what, it's kind of important. Paul, what do you think? Have you checked out the Yoga series much in your tenure?
Yeah, I think if you get past the memory card slot and it not having one, it's an okay compromise in ports because you do have two USB instead of one, and then you still have the full size USB port on the other side. For me, I hate using laptop keyboards. I know Lenovo's they're generally better than others, but I still like to plug in my own keyboard and my own mouse. So I need, you know, at least two full size USB ports. Three preferably, so I can plug in a thumb drive as well. But I think for most people, it's an okay compromise if you kind of want to get something that works now and maybe a little bit better in the future if USB-C is going to take off more.
Yeah. Yeah. What's also interesting about this 2-in-1 trend is that we're seeing almost every new 2-in-1 for 2018 coming with the stylus pen. Perhaps if you're Microsoft, it's an optional accessory, or if you're Apple selling your iPad Pro, it's an optional accessory. But we've seen HP, we've seen Dell. Are they optional add-ons, guys? Are they getting bundled in? I'd have to look at that.
It's optional.
Are they all optional? They're all optional. Okay,
but all optional, but it's optional here.
It is okay. Yeah, it's interesting that we're seeing pens being put alongside these devices all the time now. The 920 has a Wacom Active Electrostatic Digitizer, AES acronym, and that's a little bit more, even more power and flexibility from an annotation standpoint. And obviously, it tips to the convertible nature of the device in tablet mode. Folks sometimes want to annotate more, want to draw on the screen, and so the stylus is there. I'd have to look to see if the stylus is an optional adder, but it's intriguing that stylus thing is prominent, where the micro SD card slot is sometimes a no-show. I don't know. The trends are funny, and I'm sure all these companies are doing their market research and their surveys to try and get the data that says, yes, users are, this is a use case. This stylus use case is requested on a regular basis. So, interesting stuff. I mean, from a price and value proposition standpoint, as configured, we tested the machine again, quad core, 256 gig, NVMe SSD, 8 gig of RAM, and that full HD display, 1279. So, a fully configured machine, again, with that built-in Wacom digitizer, not just, it's a full Wacom setup, excuse me, on a display. So you get a fair amount of value there for what is pretty much price competitive. I mean, these days it's nice. I'm trying to think what the entry level is for this guy. You can get a 4K display all the way up to, for $2,000 if you want the 4K option in the panel. But usually entry level for this line of machines, I'm actually looking at it right now. Yeah, it's $1,000. It's $900 to $1,000 for the entry level base of the machine. And that's kind of where we're starting to see things now. Everybody's sort of settling in at that entry level $899 to $999 price range for a base config. For these ultrabooks, for these higher end 2-in-1 machines that we're looking at, it's an interesting trend to watch the price points. But obviously there are better values if you just want something a little bit more, plain Jane, utilitarian, without the kind of style of a Yoga 920. Still a good value, Marco. What do you think?
I think so. I mean, it's not. You're gonna pay for the premium build and the premium machines, but you do get what you pay for.
Yeah. Well, and comparatively, that's the way things are mapping out, and certainly versus the Apple ecosystem on the Mac side of the house, there every bit of that price and more. In many cases. So but good stuff on coming to market, and we're seeing all of these previously dual core only 2-in-1s, ultra light machines, 3-pound and less machines, now coming, with quad core, configurations available across the board, on almost every model. Sure, you can dial it down to a 7th gen core if you want. I think I'd have to look at what the configuration options are for this specific machine from Lenovo, but 8th gen quad core in these machines now, where historically all you could get was a dual core, so a lot more horsepower, and the battery life in these machines it's holding up as well, thanks to Intel's some of the advancements in Intel's Kaby Lake R generation of CPUs. So good stuff. Yeah. Good stuff. Come on by the site, check it out, the Lenovo Yoga 920. Let's move back. Let's shift gears back to some big iron stuff. And talk a little bit about a wild announcement that we didn't see coming, to save our lives. I totally didn't see this. Although I know the folks at Main Gear and Unicorn, Raul Sood, formerly of HP's Omen and Voodoo PC prior to that, HP's Omen line of gaming systems and Voodoo PC prior to that. Raul Sood and Unicorn partners with Main Gear for ACM killer cryptocurrency mining rigs. And there it is right there. That is the Main Gear ACM co-branded with Unicorn. That is a big, bad box. Marco, tell us what you know about that thing and what your thoughts, kind of mixed emotions I've heard about this on the market.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. So Raul was actually at Microsoft before he went. When he sold Voodoo to HP after HP was at Microsoft, and then he started Unicorn. So, but yeah, these machines are kind of crazy. So Main Gear makes insane PCs. We already know that. This particular one is a big beastly box. There's two models. There's the Main Gear ACM, the Advanced Crypto Miner, and there's the ACM Pro. Now, there's not a ton of detail yet, and if you go to the site, there's no pricing. You can be notified when they're available. Pricing is probably going to vary widely because they can have up to six GPUs. CPU performance is going to, you know, depending what CPU you choose, is what your mining workload is going to be. So that's all probably being worked out, but these things are nuts. So the regular ACM is this big honking box, up to six GPUs. There's a huge, huge capacity vented at the bottom and three fans across the top that blow through the GPUs there. You can actually see the image right on the screen right now. Now, over and above just the fact that a boutique PC builder is now making purpose-built mining rigs with the kind of attention to detail that a gaming rig would get, you know, that's newsworthy in and of itself. The partnership with Unicorn is kind of interesting. So you could actually pay for the machine in Unicoin Gold, which is Unicorn's currency that they developed recently. And it's not one of the big giant coins yet, but you have some pretty well-known people behind it. You got Mark Cuban is backing it with works with Raul. Main Gear and Unicorn are together now. So, and it's sort of like the de facto esports coin also. So that's Unicorn's core competencies, the esports betting, that whole scene there. So pretty crazy stuff. Now, over and above that first system, the one that you see pictures, there's also an ACM Pro, which is rack mountable.
Yeah.
So if you got the big bucks and you're going to stack a rack full of these things, they have the ACM Pro. I haven't seen pictures of that case. I assume it's very similar and it just has brackets that mount to the side. But yeah, man, Main Gear is putting that awesome build expertise towards mining. And I don't know, some people aren't going to be too cool with that because mining is wreaking havoc on the gaming scene.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's what I was referring to with mixed emotions. There's been some criticism of the announcement that Main Gear's stepping out here with a mining rig. They've catered to gamers all along, and what are they doing here? They're building something that the ecosystem of which cryptocurrency mining has, in some ways, hurt gamers because it's driving the cost and availability of GPUs up so high. And so, you know, there's a contradictory dynamic there. I think this remains to be seen once we see the configs start shipping in market, but I had heard that they weren't building these systems with, graphics cards, with gaming graphics cards, but with specific dedicated products. Instead of GPU, are we talking ASICs or are we talking stripped down GPUs? You know, I mean, I wonder what that could be in there for the mining processor versus obviously a standard host CPU.
I doubt they're ASICs. No one has made an ASIC for Unicoin. But there are purpose-built GPUs that aren't game GPUs. A couple of companies have them. I can't really tell from the pictures what's in there. Yeah, this is going to be interesting because you have retailers now and even like NVIDIA trying to discourage retailers. hyperscalers from selling GPUs for mining. And we have, you know, just in the last segment talking about how boutique systems sort of have this price advantage because you can, you're not getting as gouged on the GPU. Does that give like a builder like Main Gear this sort of advantage to sell GPUs in a system like this? I'm not sure how this all shakes out and what the details are, and that's probably why there's not a ton of detail on the page yet. But yeah, this is funky stuff, man. I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little there, bud. I don't know if it's your system, not your system, but your connection, your internet connection. You're a little choppy there. It seemed like there was some lag going on. The internet gods were not being kind to you momentarily. Hopefully it'll clear up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But that's all right. That's all right. You might want to just drop and reconnect or close tabs or something. I don't know. Kick the gerbils in the treadmill a little harder.
John, do I look funky to you too? Because it seems like it's playing okay to me here. I don't have anything open but this.
Yeah.
Oh, it's definitely choppy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Weird. And John, the rest of us knuckleheads aren't choppy, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, that's good. Anyways, let's keep moving along. Yeah. You know, I'm eager to see what that product, turns out to be, when it does come to market. I think it's interesting. I think it's smart of those guys. It's an opportunity that, is obvious and it's there. If you're building high-end computing systems for various markets, and you know, Main Gear caters to more than just gamers. Obviously, gamers are their core; they're passionate about that. That's, you know, that's their primary customer base, clearly. And you talk to Wallace there and Ron Reed, the guys at Main Gear that are you know, heading up that place, that are public facing. Great guys. They know how to build machines really well, and they're gamers themselves, and so they're very passionate about the core gaming community. I think they're going to figure out a way to walk the line here and still, you know, capture that adjacent opportunity, or at least try and tap into that adjacent opportunity in crypto mining. It's blowing up. It's big. It is affecting, you know, stocks, you know, the market as well. AMD and Nvidia are both up today. There were some rumors and rumblings, not rumors and rumblings, but reports from analysts close to the market and close to cryptocurrency and the opportunities that are driving demand for GPUs from AMD and Nvidia. And you know, when you have that sort of critical mass, you're a fool not to, you know, if you have a way to tap into that adjacent opportunity, you'd be a fool not to look at it. And so you have to applaud the guys at Main Gear for seeing the opportunity and reacting to it with more than just their own you know, brand and I guess equity and juice, if you will, from a product standpoint, but teaming up with Unicorn and what they're doing there for esports and mining and coin and all that stuff. That man, I mean, Unicorn's got a lot of irons in the fire too. So it'll be a wild ride to watch how that thing goes and what they're able to do with it, and how the market reacts with all of what's going on right now. I mean, talk about a roller coaster. Every other day you're reading something new. I mean, just wild stuff. It's a wild frontier, right?
Yeah, man. It's crazy.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to the land of storage, and then we'll finish up with some good news from Microsoft, I think. A little bit of rumor and rumbling, but also some inside baseball for Microsoft. But let's talk about an announcement from Samsung. They unleashed the SZ985Z SSD. This is a new 800 gig and actually 240 gig model of Z NAND SSD, which is a new type of NAND technology that Samsung has introduced to market. What's intriguing about this is that it is pitched and being positioned as an extremely low latency, you know, fast access time SSD technology. So you get all the glorious sequential bandwidth, and the numbers are really nice with this guy. 3 gigabytes per second of read, 3 gigabytes per second of write performance, flat, you know, both read and write. So it's faster than the average NVMe SSD in terms of writes. Most, I think, top out at like 2 gigabytes per second, if I'm not mistaken, on the same, especially on like the Samsung 960 line. But 3 and 3 reads and writes, really nice for sequential bandwidth. And then latency, IO latency is like 16 microseconds, which is pretty darn competitive with Intel's Optane technology, which is built on completely different memory technology. But this is an enhanced version of NAND tuned for ultra low latency, and also with a new controller with like 1.5 gigs of RAM on board as well on the PCI Express card that you saw in that picture. And so really set up for ultra high performance with what Samsung termed as the same base level NAND structure of their original 3D VNAND. But obviously, you know, tweaked up and tuned for ultra low latency. So, you know, sort of going head to head with Optane, but utilizing standard NAND and just, you know, tricking it out, if you will, for lack of better words, to perform at the lower latency characteristics like Optane. So sort of the best of both worlds, perhaps, because you get that super high sequential transfer that Optane currently doesn't hit. Marco, you might want to chime in here eventually on that, but what do you think about this? You know, it's really sort of an impressive product. It's targeted at really high-end HPC, high-performance computing, as well as AI and, you know, other high-end data server, big data and analytics server applications. So the implication is it's not going to be cheap, and it might not come down to at least to the mainstream consumer market as a consumer product for now. But, you know, what's in the high end there can oftentimes trickle down to consumers' products and price points that consumers can attain. So it's intriguing. What do you think, Marco? What do you, when you look at this versus, especially versus Optane, because I know you've done quite a bit of work with Optane in the past.
So yeah, Samsung hasn't released all of the details on Z-NAND, so kind of speculating on some stuff with right. That much DRAM on there and a tweak controller. And we know the NAND is something special as well, but I think it's the combination of all of that is how they're able to get endurance so high and bring latency down so low. Having that much DRAM, if it's strictly cache or if it's helping, I could see big data people not being happy with potentially losing data because of that cache. But I'm just speculating. I'm just saying that
right.
The difference with Optane, it's not strictly about performance. Like the 3D cross-point memory, that's sort of the foundation of Optane, theoretically has the potential to completely change CPU architectures. If CPUs were designed with memory controllers that worked with 3D cross-point, your storage and memory could just be one single tier of this DRAM-like non-volatile memory. So like it really, like I'm not exaggerating, 3D XPoint could revolutionize or could completely transform how computers are built at some point, where the Samsung tech will not. And Optane now can even be used as a separate memory tier if you need massive amounts of RAM and don't want to spend the money on DRAM. But in the short term, where you're plugging in a fast storage solution, this Samsung solution seems pretty awesome, assuming it's not exponentially more expensive than Optane. It should theoretically be cheaper than Optane if they want to, you know, compete in that space.
You know what's interesting about the press release on the product? And again, as you noted, there was an intentional amount of, vagueness to it. They left some pertinent details out. They weren't ready to share them yet, and that's fine. I mean, we get that all the time. There's early announcements and introductions all the time. But it's obviously close. They've got a product, pretty well defined and, specified in certain cases. We're seeing the bandwidth numbers, the latency numbers. But they did use the word, new memory tier. They did use that language. And so, I mean, clearly targeting Optane, and 3D XPoint. So yeah, I wonder how that's going to map out, if it's going to really approach what Optane can do, or if it's somewhere in between, because, you know, it's it certainly from a spec standpoint, at least on paper, looks pretty attractive for some applications. Yep.
Sure.
Paul, you want one of these? You jonesing for one, Paul?
Yeah, if you're offering, sure, send it my way. Otherwise, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I Marco and I both have an affinity for SSDs. I mean, when you talk about, you know, the one thing that can affect performance the most and move the needle, oftentimes it's an SSD. And so, yeah, well, it's near and dear to our hearts, and we are close to the storage market. We will stay close to this for sure. Marco, you're looking at some new stuff from Intel. You recently took a look at their SSD 760P, which is a new NVMe standard NAND flash device, but you've also got something else on tap, right?
Yes, and I'm dumb because I forgot to pull it out of my test rig to pull it and show it to everybody. But I sort of hinted at it at the last podcast right. That I had an enterprise SSD, and we have a bit of a scoop going on. I have an Intel SSD DCP4600, their enterprise class SSD in-house, a 2 terabyte model. And I'm done with testing. I'm hoping I should have the review up tomorrow. So even now, if someone else sees this and goes to complain to Intel that we have one and they don't, they're not going to catch us at this point anyway. So it's, you know, this is the follow-up to... It's sort of the replacement to the P3700, which we reviewed a couple of years ago. It is a you know, enterprise class, over 3 gigs per second read, tuned for high throughput PCI Express SSD. Mm. It uses the newer NAND than the P3700. But as you'll see in the numbers when I have the review up, it's really right in the same class as that P3700. It's better in some respects and about the same in others, but super fast. I have comparisons to 3 other enterprise SSDs in the new test bed. Plus I threw the consumer Optane drive because that's what I have on hand, and a Samsung SSD in there just for comparison. So come by the site, hopefully tomorrow, if not Friday at the latest, have that SSD review going up. Pretty cool stuff, and I would love to get my hands on one of those Samsung drives. If you're watching Samsung, you know, hook a brother up.
Yeah, baby. Refresh me again. Is it standard NAND that you're looking at on the new Intel drive?
Yes, this is not okay, an so Optane.
It's not an Optane. Gotcha. Right. Cool. Well, like I said, we love playing with the bandwidth and the solid state storage. Good stuff. Let's move along and we'll finish up on Microsoft. Microsoft to give Windows 10 a modern overhaul with lightweight Polaris Windows Core. We picked up a line on this from some of the different or a site that follows. Follows the Windows scene pretty closely. I'm forgetting who it was, but I'll have to look that up. But at any rate, what's intriguing about this is Microsoft is looking to revamp the core OS of Windows and trim the fat and tune it up and make it a little bit lighter weight. And, you know, hopefully as a result, give us, you would think, theoretically, better overall performance. Marco, have you dug into this at all? Do you know? You're pretty close. You're the Microsoftie of the bunch, you know. Yeah.
I did check this out. So this is interesting stuff. So there's, you know, Microsoft's goal is to have Windows everywhere. But Windows, as we know it on the desktop, it's kind of big. You can't just stick it anywhere. So Microsoft wants to strip out the legacy code that's not really necessary for new and modern hardware. And they also want to make the OS more modular so you can really just piece together the proper OS for the device it's being installed on. And they want it to be universal across all platforms. So like right now, yeah, you know, when Microsoft was making phones, they technically had Windows 10 on the phones and you have Windows 10 on your notebook, but it's not the same Windows 10. The kernel was the same, but the shell layer and other layers were different. The goal is to have the same thing across all platforms. And that's what this is sort of about. It's about moving to the Windows Core OS as the foundation of Windows and building off of that for all devices. I don't know how I feel about it technically, because it technically removes Win32 compatibility. So all these legacy apps that we use on our desktops will have to be either run through emulation or through the cloud or through some sort of container. It's all kind of still shaking out. It was Windows Central that broke the Polaris code name and the fact that that's the code name for the desktop version that's coming. So it could be incorrect. I doubt they're incorrect, but the rumor could be incorrect. But yeah, this is we kind of seen this coming with the Snapdragon 845 notebooks that look just like Windows 10, but it's, you know, Windows on ARM, full Windows on ARM. It's just another step towards unifying Windows and being able to have a lightweight, faster, less, you know, requires less processing resources because lots of the legacy stuff is stripped out version of Windows. And when it's done, I think this will be the foundation of sort of having Windows on every device, whether it's in your pocket or your desktop.
This may be a dumb question. Yeah. This may be a dumb question, but I'm supposed to be the straight guy, so I'm allowed to ask dumb questions. the average mainstream user, I'll be the half geek. The average mainstream user, how much do they really care about backwards Win32 backwards compatibility?
If you ask the average user, they're going to be like, "What the hell is that?"
Yeah, personally, right.
I think, but, of course. But when they go to install a program that they're used to and can't do it, or it's running really weird on this new machine because it's emulated and it feels slow, or it takes much longer to launch, or it's not in the Windows Store, how do I get it on there? That's when the pain comes in. So those are all the things that have to be worked out. You know, using just the Universal Windows platform apps. I don't know, it's not for everybody right now. Not everybody's happy with that kind of solution either. You know, Windows 10S, lots of people do with a Windows 10S device is upgrade it to Pro for free because that's an option. So I don't know. I mean, this is all stuff Microsoft has to move towards.
Right, but we're not talking about, I mean, Microsoft's, you know, end goal here is not talking about moving everybody to just a UWP
That's what this would be. So that's what this would be. So Win32 compatibility is kind of bolted onto this.
Yeah.
The goal is to get everybody using UWP apps. So yes, that is actually with this. So this is sort of the next gen Windows 10S. What was that?
So if it's not on the Windows Store, you're not going to be able to install it.
Well, they're going to, because this is the desktop version, I think Andromeda was the code name of the mobile one that's supposed to appear on a foldable device sometime later this year. That's the other rumor. But the Polaris code name is for the desktop version, and Win32 capability is going to be built in. So it's not, how they do it isn't confirmed, but that they will do it is sort of understood, that they will have Win32. So everyone's going to be able to run their stuff, but it's not native any longer.
Right.
So,
right. You lose some performance in emulation, of course. Yeah.
Maybe, unless the OS is so much faster and lighter weight, you don't see it. You know,
you don't care. Yeah. You don't care. Right. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. No, I mean, the intrinsic benefit of this move is that you've got a much lighter footprint on the OS, much lighter memory footprint, cleaner, leaner registry, all of the goodness that comes with, you know, just supporting, you know, one platform natively. And that could be good. But I think there'd be a serious uprising if you said, yeah, guess what? It's, you know, it's UWP and everything else runs in emulation. Have a nice day. I don't know. I don't know how well that goes over. And it's a sticky, tricky path for them to walk.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's sort of, you know, that's, Microsoft is one of those companies that could, you know, it's kind of hard to imagine them supplanting iOS or Android. It's just because they're those two mobile OSs are so pervasive. But I still think, because they have such a presence in the living room with Xbox and everybody's notebook, you know, 90%+, virtually every desktop, you know, 90%+. Many people would see the appeal of just one universal OS across everything. And you have your, you know, your cloud connection logged in. So all your stuff is just there on every device and it just works.
Yeah.
They could do it. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like that trend. I mean, that there's one nice trend with the cloud, and you know, the hooks that are built into it, that's very convenient. You know, when I hop from my desktop to my laptop now in Windows, you know, all of my stuff is, my settings are mirrored over, my preferences are mirrored over. Another nice thing, even, you know, Chrome, for example, which is, you know, not a, obviously a, it's a Google app, all of my bookmarks and all of my, you know, other customizations in the browser are mirrored over to my laptop, and I didn't even do it. It just did it for me. And so there's a lot of, I like to see more of that. I think that's, you know, more of the contextually aware computing and convenience side of things that that the industry is working on, and it's good to see that continue to evolve. Paul, are you excited for a new modern Windows 10, Paul?
We'll see. I think they can get away with their approach if they'll probably start off with, I think you guys mentioned earlier, on Qualcomm powered laptops first. If you go with that approach and start there, I think it would be a less of a shock to the system as far as compatibility and performance.
This is definitely a gradual migration thing. Yeah, you do a jarring cutover like they did with Windows 8, and you cause a shitstorm. Oops, I swore. Well, hey, you know what? I think it's time to call it a day, gentlemen. Marco, we got anything on tap for giveaways? Are we going to be giving away stuff soon?
Nothing official to announce, but we obviously will give something away soon.
we're going to be working to tee up some manufacturers for the next giveaway. We always have one coming in just like a train, so stay tuned. We'll let you know on that. In the meantime, check us out at hothardware.com. that's where you can find us on the web. We're also at twitter.com/hothardware, facebook.com/hothardware, youtube.com, where we hope you would thumb this up and subscribe and join us here when you can. Hot Hardware there as well, or Hot Hardware Vids, and we're on G+ all over the place. We're here on Wednesdays, though. Next week we may have to mix it up because I'm traveling. These guys may be doing it solo. I don't know, but what do you think, guys? You want to swing it next week solo without me? Probably have a lot more fun. All right, man. Well, in the meantime, everybody, have a great rest of your week, and thanks for stopping by.